the first talk about the river trip tomorrow. So I'm a ranger with State of Utah, more specifically with Utah State Park. But I've never worked really a day in a park. I'm kind of a roamer, and I cover the Moab area. So all this land you see, we cover. We help protect the land, resource protection. And that comes by way of chasing down ATVs, UTVs, motorcycles, and whatever else you can ride on wheels out here. So try and keep people on the trail and keep this place clean so that when you and those who come after you can enjoy the experience too. Because Moab is Utah as of late. According to Governor Herbert, he's throwing a lot of money to get a lot of people here. So it's a big place and a really fun place. So one of my title or my responsibilities is we have jurisdiction on the water. So we help manage boating laws and rules on the water. And so number one rule, wear your life jacket. It'll be required to wear it all day tomorrow. Keep all the buckles up. I know it kills the suntan, but there's plenty of time for that after. And the water's really high right now. We're way above average. And so you're going to hit some big rapids. Watch out for Cloudburst Rapid, they call it. Or New Rapid. It's big and fun right now. Are you running the whole daily?
Yeah, we're going to put in at Dewey and run down to about Big Bend.
Oh, okay. It's really fast right now, too. So
I was told by some people in First Ward that probably lasts maybe 4 hours or so. Is that
4 hours if you don't stop for lunch?
And we're going to stop for lunch, so.
So it'll be a good day. That's a good place to go in, but it'll be fast and furious. So wear your life jacket.
What if I fall and die?
Don't fall and die. Okay. Well, if you fall, you fall in water, first of all. You can't die from doing that.
Unless you can't swim.
If the water's cold, it's, upper 50s. But it's just right because it'll be upper 90s, mid to upper 90s. So it'll be plenty warm. Wear sunscreen, drink water. First sign of grumpiness is dehydration. So drink. I don't go anywhere without water here because it's hot. You should drink a lot. Up to 1 gallon a day. So those guys in your group?
Yeah, they are.
All right. So, so let's say you do fall in. You come up, boats, maybe it's coming towards you, maybe it's going away. First thing to do is to get in like a defensive swim. So, let's say Travis is downstream, I'm heading towards Travis and you guys over there. You want to be in this position, knees bent, butt up, you'll be in the life jacket, floating. And this is a great defensive swim position so that you can swim away from stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And the guy in the boat's either going to tell you, he's going to point positive. Swim to me or swim away, swim to shore. Most likely you'll just swim to the boat because it'll be right there. But in case you get flushed downstream, get in that position. Breathe in the troughs. You'll be in waves. So when you're heading downhill into that trough, take a breath. Hold your breath because you're going to get splashed by the next wave. Stay calm. It's actually fun to fall in. I like swimming rapids. It's a fun experience, but it could happen easily tomorrow because the water's big. And it'll be a good time. So let's say the boat flips and you come up and it's still dark. What does that mean, you think? Come up underneath the boat. So I imagine you'll be on paddle boats tomorrow. There's air pockets in between those thwarts, we call them. It's the tube that's in the middle of the boat. You come up, grab some air, and then choose a direction and just climb out. Now don't go a few feet and decide, I'm never getting to the end of that boat, and turn around. You climb the other way. You'll just be doing laps under that boat. So choose one direction, take a good breath, get under. Get out from under the boat, and then hang onto the boat, ride the rapid. When you get through the rapid, flip the boat back over. I imagine there'll be some kind of flip lines, or with enough people,
you can just throw ropes, and there'll be the lines on the sides. So,
be able to push it back over, get back on. The paddle you'll have, never let go of it. Swim with the paddle. Because right now you'll never retrieve it. The water's so fast. It'll just be gone. So hang on to that paddle. That's going to be your lifesaver. Get back on the boat and go downstream. Whoever's the captain of the boat, listen to the captain. It's always a good thing. Mutiny's never a good thing.
Oh.
On a boat, I know. Pirates. So there is a throw rope that Travis has mentioned. It's this little bag. It's got like 50 feet of rope in it. Could have more feet of rope in it. Most likely, when you come out from under a boat, you're maybe 10, 15 feet away. And they're going to throw you that bag if they can't get to you in time. Grab the rope and not the bag. Because if you grab that bag and hang onto it, they're just going to be pulling more rope out of it. So you grab the rope and throw it in your armpit, right? And naturally, it's going to turn you around. Imagine you'll be wearing jackets that create this air pocket. So when they turn you around and pull you towards the boat, this water is going to pour over. You're still going to have this air pocket to breathe, and they'll bring you back onto the boat and get you on. And you'll have a story to tell when you go home. A good one, hopefully. Back to the life jackets. You almost want them to where it's uncomfortable to breathe when you're getting into those rapids, because when you get wet, it loosens up slightly. You want that tight. You don't want the jacket going over your ears. Like before you hit the boats and you're on shore, test your buddy. And if that jacket goes above your ears, it's too loose. So you want to cinch it down a little bit more and make sure it's firm and tight against your body. I think that's about it.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Water fights are illegal. Can't have them. I'm just kidding. Please, water fight. It's a lot of fun. You got squirt guns or anything?
No, but we usually just knock each other in when we're not in the rapids.
There you go, king of the boat.
Yeah.
That's me.
But it is fast. The water's fast. You get carried away quickly, so stay close to the boat. And there's like rapids in a long flat water section and another rapid. So there's a lot of time to recover and play between each rapid. Some of them are washed out. The upper ones are bigger than the lower ones right now.
Oh, okay.
So, Big Ben's washed out. And it's a big one in lower water.
Yeah.
How many boats?
We got three.
Oh, that's cool.
Three 16-footers.
That would be a lot of fun. I'm kind of jealous. Jeff might be out there tomorrow.
Jeff? Yeah. Oh, cool.
Jeff Arvin used to be a trooper, worked with Travis.
He
switched over to the good side.
Well, see, Brody got his job when he came to the highway patrol, and now he's gone back. So
he might be out there on the water. Cool. Playing on it, so.
I hope so. I want to see Jeff.
I'll tell him to look for you. He'll be on a big blue boat, big motor on the back, running up and down. Anyone have any questions about the river run? Now, I've just talked worst case scenario, you know, if the boat flips and all that. There's a chance for it, but there's also a pretty good chance it's going to be really fun, so.
Yeah.
If not,
it's up to you, right? You choose to have a good, fun time, or, you know, choose to be miserable, but. No questions? Okay, well, November 19th. 2010, I was on patrol, and I was looking for basically kids that were drinking alcohol. It's under a youth alcohol grant, they call it. And my lieutenant and I, my boss, we decided to separate that night and go check certain party spots that have been there in the past. And then we were to meet back up, go into the camp, and ID kids, and make sure people were doing what they were supposed to do. And so anyway, I decided to head down the river, just outside of Moab there. They call it Potash Road. I came to a trailhead called Poison Spider Mesa Trailhead. And I pulled up into the parking lot, and there was, you know, one car there. And this was late November, so it was, you know, the season was coming to an end. Not very many people out. But usually when we find a car at that trailhead, there's someone lost or hurt up on the trail. And so my thoughts were to go write the license plate down. Didn't look like anyone was in the car. Write the license plate down and check on it later that night. It was about 8 o'clock, 8:15. It was dark, you know, November. Sun goes down early. So, got out of my vehicle, turned on some lights to kind of highlight the vehicle. Walked over to towards the back of it and wrote the plate down, and then I walked to the kind of the driver's side of the vehicle, and as I was passing the back passenger seat, I see a lump sleeping bag. There's a guy sleeping in the back, and I tried to wake him up, knocked on the window a few times. He was pretty dead asleep. I woke him up, opened the door, and we had a pretty calm conversation. I asked, you know, where he was from, and got a name, date of birth, things you do that officers do, so we can ID the person. We talked about where he could go camp, and then I asked him to wait there a minute, and I was going to go back to my truck and call out his information, find out who he was. And as I was walking back to my truck, fortunately I left my truck door open, which I like to do. I don't like to sit in my truck very long. But as I walked back to my truck, I got to, you know, the door open. I turned to get in, and then shots rang out at me. He had gotten out of his vehicle and had come around and started coming at me, blazing with gunfire. First two rounds hit me here in the arm. You can kind of see the scars. See the muscle behind those scars? I don't see it either. Anyway, those two rounds hit me there and just shattered my humerus. Exploded. And I turned away, probably just from the force of, you know, that sound of bone breaking and the hard hit. Turned, and that's when I believed three more rounds. He shot me in the back. Pretty center mass. I was wearing a vest. I was taught from the beginning, if you wear the uniform, you wear the vest. Fortunately, I was. So three rounds to the back, two of the rounds were stopped by the vest, the third round went through into my vertebrae. Still there today. It's embedded about an inch, and it's in just the right spot. And so I kind of turned away, and I looked over my shoulder, and I see just more muzzle flash coming at me, and I kind of fall to the ground, and he's just almost standing on top of me, just round after round. I only felt these two, fortunately. Don't know why. I think it was a godsend. Anyway, fired more rounds, and I was laying on the ground, and I had this moment, time stand still, I had a decision to make. I could lay down and die, or get up and defend myself and run to the fight. And fortunately, due to some training and some promptings early on in my police career, I got up and did what I was trained to do. You go for cover. I'm left-handed, by the way. That's where he shot me first. Left-hand dominant. My gun's on this side. You train to use, you know, your dominant hand. We also train to use our non-dominant hand. It was something that I trained hard to do. Practice weak-handed draw strokes, dry firing in the basement. Just things I felt prompted that I should strongly perfect the skill. We all have skill sets we learn every day. Tell me your name.
Katie.
Katie, what's the first thing you do when you get up in the morning? Do you have a routine?
I shower.
Shower?
Mm-hmm.
Breakfast?
Breakfast.
Which hand do you brush your teeth with?
Right hand.
You right-handed? These are routines. These are skills we learn. Do you have a job?
No.
Good for you. Summertime, you shouldn't. Have you ever had a job?
She's
She does a summer camp for kids.
She does a kids camp every summer.
Oh, that's great.
Katie camp.
Yeah. Certain skills are required to make this kids camp happen, I imagine. We all have skills that we learn every day. And I'm sure you do a pretty good job at it. You like doing the kids camp?
Mm-hmm.
Want to be better at it?
Yeah.
It was the same thing for me. I wanted to be the best at what I was doing. And I knew that if I could be the best at what I was doing, I was guaranteed I would go home to my family that night. I was guaranteed that I would live. I really believed it and thought it and still do. There's a promise in the scriptures. If you are prepared, you shall not fear. Believed it. Followed it. That's why I trained so hard. That's why I believe I was prompted to train in certain things, certain aspects that kept me alive that night. It was a terrible thing, but only Heavenly Father knew I would go through it. And if I listened to Him, I was going to live. Now there's a lot of grace there. I'm really fortunate to be alive. When I was on the ground, several more rounds hit me, and these rounds hit me low and went in under my vest and up inside and bounced around. These were hollow point bullets, so when they hit a solid surface, they're made to flower and spread. And that's what happened. Hit bone, flower and spread, and just tear up my internal organs. One of those bullets went into my left lung, lower left lobe. Still there, it's in the perfect spot between airways and everything that's important to a lung. Another bullet went in and hit my heart, went into my heart. They call it the pericardial sac, it's the pumper of the heart, and my heart pushed the bullet out and a clot formed that kept me from bleeding out. Now medically, how do you explain that? It's only from above. I believe that grace came from. It came out and slid between my heart and esophagus. I lost half my stomach. My sections of my intestine where it had to be taken out. They had to go through me like a fine-tooth comb and find every small injury from all those shreds of metal that spread throughout all over me. One of the rounds that hit me lower was in between my groin and femoral artery, like millimeters. Millimeter to the left, and I should have bled out and died. I guess what I'm trying to say is there were a lot of miracles that night beyond what I could do alone. And I and my family had to rely on our Heavenly Father to preserve my life, keep me alive. So, I believe, everything happens for a reason, but I sincerely believe that those bullets were guided, because a lot of them ended up in the right spot. I should be paralyzed, I should be 6 feet under the ground, and a memory to most, but for some reason I wasn't, and I can't explain it. Why some people die and why some people live, other than to say that I gotta find out why. Find my purpose in life. And if it's just to be a dad and a friend, that's good with me. From all of this, my relationships with others and with God, it's most important. How you treat others. Someday we'll all meet our Maker and those questions will be asked. How'd you treat others? And did you remember me? So I learned a couple of things. Time, training, never giving up, and gratitude. I'm living on borrowed time. I think we all are living on borrowed time. We never know when it's going to end. And so time is, and it was before, but has become crucial. Every day I live, is I'm going to make it better. I'm going to try and increase my skills, even if it's with our relationship with our Heavenly Father and His Son, and that feeling, that gift of the Holy Ghost, I think most of us have here, not all. So I got up off the ground and ran for cover in my truck. And we were playing this cat and mouse game around my truck. And I think he had run out of ammunition, and I was still holding a pad of paper and pen in my hand. My right hand, which I always do, because I'm trying to leave this hand free to defend myself. So I finally looked at it and threw it to the ground and reached over and did what training prepared me to do. Grabbed my gun, and then we're playing this cat and mouse game, and I see a silhouette through the windows of, I was driving a truck, and I'd had some training the spring before to shoot through your vehicle, shoot through your windows. Something you don't think to do, to shoot through your cover, something you're seeking protection from. We trained how to shoot through that. I knew the round I was carrying would go through everything but the engine block. And so when I saw a silhouette in the window, I fired through my windows at him, caused him to retreat. I reloaded one-handed. Again, my left arm is out of the equation. My dominant hand, the one I really rely on, is out of the equation. I reloaded and went back. And saw his silhouette again and fired some more rounds. And then he ended up in front of my truck. And his hands went up and I stopped shooting immediately. We're taught to do that when the threat is not a threat. Stop going after the threat. So I stopped and he said, you got me. And then I went unconscious. I started blacking out. I think my adrenaline had run out. I'd been shot so many times and was losing blood at that point internally, and I kind of staggered back. As I was going out, I fired some more rounds through my truck, and then he got in his car and drove away. And then I woke up a short time later and realized I was the only one there, and no one knew I was there. I hadn't called out to notify our dispatch, our radio help that that I had stopped at that place. And so I realized I had to get to my truck radio. It was the only way I could get out, because we were in a deep canyon, and the handheld radio I was wearing wouldn't get out. So I slowly started to took some breaths, first of all. I was really tight to breathe, probably because of all the internal injuries. Began to slowly roll, and what gave me the strength to roll was a real comfort to me were thoughts of my wife and my three little kids at the time, 6, 3, and 9 months. Began to slowly roll to my truck, and thankfully I made it to the radio. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever done. Made it to my radio, said in a calm voice, my number, I've been shot, I'm at this location, come get me. And I kind of laid down and didn't know what to do after that. I hadn't trained myself to what to do after that. I think if I would have had training to treat my wounds somehow, I could have helped myself even more. That's really the one thing I regret, and not calling out on the radio. But anyway, I waited for help to arrive, ambulance showed up. They, what do? They cut all your clothes off. Cut my favorite shirt off. I was a little disappointed in that. My favorite boots, socks. I was wearing all my favorite things that day. anyway, cut things off, and the blood just started to pour out, and they tried to patch me up the best they could, threw me in the ambulance, and then rushed me to what was the old hospital, El Memorial, and then Life Flight came in and flew me to Junction. In the emergency room, all my veins were collapsed. I was on my way to seeing the white light, although I never saw it. They did what's called an IO, where they drill into just below your kneecap, and then they flush blood into your bone marrow. And I screamed. You can imagine. I mean, I was shot 9 times, and I'm screaming in a little needle in my knee with the flesh of that fluid. But it hurt so bad. But they got blood into me, which was crucial. I had lost, up to that point, 16 units. A guy my size holds about 10 units of blood, 10 liters. And I was on, you know, bags 15 and 16. They knocked me out, induced coma, intubated, what they call it, threw me on the helicopter and flew me to Grand Junction, Colorado, over those mountains behind us. And then I woke up 3.5 weeks later. And I was a pretty built guy before that. When I woke up, I was a ghost of myself. A little skinny white guy. The ghost of my former self, and I almost didn't make it in the hospital. Apparently, mid-flight, my body balanced out. No one thought I'd survive the flight, except one person, and that was my wife. On her way to the hospital, she was blessed this comfort. You can imagine your favorite comfort you like to sleep in. Just came over here, and basically she was told I was going to live. And in that operating room, I heard a lot of crying and screaming, and except for my wife. The doctors even had to go up to her and ask, "Are you the spouse?" She wasn't acting like someone who thinks their husband's going to die. Was acting. She's blessed with this real peace, and again, that was another little comfort, another little blessing from our Father above. So I had to learn how to walk again. When I woke up, your body atrophies really fast if you hold still. And I held still for almost a month. And what I mean by atrophies, your muscles just disintegrate into nothing. So I woke up, I couldn't even really use my arms. Someone had kindly, the iPad had just come out, and it was on the desk or the table, the counter next to my bed, and boy, I couldn't even comprehend typing. I tried to type a word, a simple word, like two, and I couldn't do it. I just had to learn to do things over again. That muscle memory is an interesting thing. But our Heavenly Father is knows each of us by name. And He knows our needs and our temperament more than we know ourselves. And really, our purpose here is to listen to Him. That's going to get us through life. I'm grateful I did listen to Him. Had I not, I don't think I'd be alive. Do I always listen to Him? No. Sometimes I want to do my own thing. It's easy to do your own thing. But boy, when we listen, He is there. And I was out of the hospital in 2 weeks. They thought I'd be there for months. And as soon as I woke up, there was this healing, miracle healing that took place. So in my left arm, they put this rod that's still there in my arm to replace the bone. Because adults, bones stop growing. They start to shrink once we hit our 30s. They say it's the prime of our life, but I think that's more the 20s. Or your age right now. Your whole life ahead of you. Anyway, the bone in my arm, too much of it grew back. I have too much bone in my arm, and some of it's exposed. So if you pop me in the shoulder, I go down because it hurts. But just one of the many miracles of healing. I got out of the hospital in 2 weeks, which was Christmas Eve of all days. And I was able to go home and be at home, which was probably the greatest day. In fact, that next year was probably the greatest time of my life. So I was recovering at home, trying to get my strength back up. I was with my family. And it's the greatest time of my life, even though it was the most painful. Being there with my kids every day, not having to worry about work and things outside of the home. It was just our time to spend together. And that was a godsend. You know, we really don't appreciate things until they're taken away, right? Let's talk about when we were tiny, tiny little children. Something's taken away from us at that age. We don't like it, right? Makes you appreciate what that was. The bottle, the toy. Your older brother takes it from you. Makes you really want to have it back even more because they took it. That's just sibling rivalry. But so when we get a little older, like 14, 18, who's the oldest here? Who's the youngest?
Elijah's the oldest. He just graduated high school.
18?
18.
Our youngest is 14, or is it, are we?
Yeah, I think the youngest would be 14, or going to turn 14 soon. I don't know.
I can ask, are any of your parents here? I noticed. Is your parent here? I don't have to ask them how they act now versus a child, but I'm guessing it's all about you, right? I still think it's all about me. And I'm 38. I was 34 at the time. But I thought I was invincible. And that's how really you're supposed to feel right now. That's just the part of growing up. I think you're invincible. You aspire to be something greater than yourself. Got the rest of your life ahead of you. So then we get middle-aged, and hopefully we accomplish what we wanted in high school. Those priorities change, but my priorities now is to do well in my job, be the best dad, husband, friend to other people. That probably wasn't my goal in high school. It was to have fun and to have more fun. And now let's talk about grandparents. How do they view life? More reserved? Less risk-taking? Probably wouldn't be on the river tomorrow at this water level, yeah? Yeah, probably so. They reflect on life. Coulda, shoulda, woulda. You know, when I get to that age, I don't want to be going, I coulda, shoulda, woulda. Do it now, right? Choose the right and do it now. So, life became really important for me. Training is also important. You're going to train for the rest of your life in whatever you do. It's easy to say that cops train because we train, but whatever profession you go into, you're going to train at it to be the best. Why would anything less be acceptable? Never give up. This guy, when he shot me and when his bullets ran out, he thought I was done. And proud to say I was able to never give up and to get up. And I hope whatever you do in your lives, you never give up on what you want to do. Now, there are two ways to go in doing what you want to do. You can go with God or against God. With God is the harder path. With God is the better path. I promise you that. I think anyone else here will promise you that. gratitude. You know, so many people came into our lives when this happened. It really reaffirmed our family's faith in society. You know, the news will highlight those the few and the bad that tend to make the news. But there's so much more good going on in the world than not. It's a matter of finding it, seeking after it, looking forward to it, creating it. It's up to you. And I just use the river example. You know, you can have fun tomorrow, you can not like it. But it's up to you. So, do you have any questions for me? Yeah.
Did they ever catch the guy?
The guy is still missing. Mm-hmm. Still a reward.
Did you get his name?
My guy's name, his name is Lance Leroy Arellano. He was 40 at the time. 6'1", 165. He'd gotten a fight with his mom that day and got kicked out of the house. Didn't have a job, didn't have money. He was just a little down on life. And came down here because he'd spent some time here. And we think he had planned to do something like this. And I just happened to be the first one to show up and meet the guy. But after he shot me, he drove off down Rivermore and tried to hide his car off the main road. And then he hiked about a mile with the backpack and a 22 rifle and some food. He was planning to go out and kind of disappear in the wilderness, live off the land or something. Then about a mile, he ditched his gear and disappeared. It was really close to the river, so there's a couple of theories. He either is in a cave somewhere, he's not alive, or he jumped in the river and didn't make across. The river was pretty low, and you could walk across. And it was a really warm night that night. And then the next day, it just got cold and snowy and turned against his favor. To this day, we aren't mad at this guy, just because so much more good has come from it. He made a bad decision, really bad decision, but chosen to make the most of it, you know, and so much good's come out of it. There's so many people across the world that, came and helped my family and myself, and even as far as South Africa, it was just unreal, the amount of love and support that's out there. It's great to see, you know, the world's still a great place, even though the few bad things get highlighted. But question? All right, I got something for you. So, what's it like getting shot? Hurts. Hurts really bad. I don't recommend it.
But the drill in the knee hurts worse.
The drill in the knee hurt worse. Way worse. It hurt. But honestly, I didn't feel the other rounds at all. And thank goodness. I'm a little queasy when I see a lot of my own blood, and it was dark. It was just the right situation for me to survive it. and live. Heavenly Father's there every step of the way. We just choose to leave him in the background or put him at the forefront. Yeah.
So you have the same job still?
I made it back to doing what I was doing before, for the most part. I kind of promoted and I helped manage the boating program for the state. So, but I had to go through a lot of psychological evaluations and go through the whole training again. So that just to see if I was still right up here, if I could still interact with the public and show respect where respect's due, and took a couple of years to do it. First year was getting my strength back, and then the second year was just getting back into it. I love the job. Some people think I'm crazy to go back to it, but it's a good job, and we meet a lot of great people out in the desert, on the water. Meet a few bad ones. You're going to meet a few bad ones in your life. It's just a part of life. It's how you handle it. It's going to help you get through it.
Now, they did find the guy's shirt, right?
Found a shirt.
It was covered in what they think was his blood, right?
I did injure him in the fight. I think shooting through my windows one of the rounds, if not two, injured him. It's in question where, but he was injured, which helped me. I don't wish death on anyone. I never want to shoot another person. I never want to come across that again. But it was something we trained to do and some things that we encounter that we're trained to deal with. Just as you'll be trained to do in your lives. Hopefully make the best of it. And that includes all the seminary answers, right? Read scriptures, pray, go to church, honor my mom and dad. Those are just the basics. What they lead to is an incredible feeling inside, knowing you're doing the right thing.
I have a question for you, Brother William.
What's that?
What? You put this up and you could you honestly answer right now if you would go back?
It'd be hard not. No, you know, I love my job, so I don't know. Without having experience, I don't know if I can fully say it, but I do love what I do. So I would think I'd have the determination to know that I at least could. Whether I stayed with it or not, that'd be another thing, just depending on my mental state.
That was my motivation. I had to get back to where I was. And then when I woke up, I had to know I could do it. So I ran at the fear. When I first woke up in the hospital, I was traumatized. I was scared. There was so much violence on TV. I turned it on in the hospital one day and just went, I couldn't handle it. I had to turn it to KBYU. Or I know more about Janice Capperi than you know who she is. Than you care to know. It was all I could do to make the time pass by. I was so scared. Someone tried to kill me. It was something I had to get through in my mind. And that was running at the fear. I mean, where does fear come from?
The dark side.
I had to know I could beat it. That's just my competitive nature. So, did my family like me going back? No, not at first. There was beginning of 2011, that Ogden shooting, the six officers. You can remember that a few years ago. That was not a good day in our home. We're still struggling through it. Kids, my little kids absorb so much more than we'll ever understand. And things will trigger it. So this happened in the fall. There were leaves falling, cold air, the crisp fall air. And that triggers those emotions, you know, every year. And we try and work through it. We even got some professional help. My daughter, who was 3 at the time, she expressed, you know, extreme anger. A 3-year-old can't express her feelings, you know. I have a hard time expressing feelings, but a 3-year-old doesn't have the words or the vocabulary to say it. And so we got her into, it's called play therapy. And so through her play started out as, you know, people dying and going to the hospital to rescuing people, saving people, people living through something. And to her, that solved her dilemma in her mind that bad things will happen, but good will come of it. And it was great help and help that we needed. But my older son took a different route. It was food, you know, for him. The more he ate, getting that comfort, the full belly, that's how he sought comfort. And we still slap his hand every day when he goes into the cookie jar. No! But I like food. Food's good. But we're still doing it. You know, we have great days. And some days that aren't as great, but, you know, who's there to help us is our friend, our father, the son, the spirit. That's what helped me get through that anxiety in the hospital. I found a peace early on that got me over that anxiety. And it could only have been done through our Father in heaven. Any other questions?
Do you ever feel anything from the bullets that are left in you?
I did at first. So I'm part of the zipper club. I've got a scar from below my belly button up to my throat. And when they opened me up, they had to check everything. And so those first few months, it was really loose inside. And if you can imagine, it's solid inside of you right now. It is compact. There's no space for anything there but for more food to expand your stomach. No, there's really no space. And I felt hollow and was moving around, and it was just a weird sensation inside. I could feel bullets, but the body's pretty amazing. It solidified, encapsulated those rounds and that shrapnel and made them solid. And so every 6 months I get checked out. The bullet in my back's the worst fear. If it moves, it could cause me to not move. And so I get checked out and just make sure things are still good. I was on a lot of medication, like hardcore painkillers. I'm talking heavy narcotics. It eventually came to a point where I had to wean off because I couldn't live without those narcotics function. I was so beat up and sore. I would take those, they'd last 4 hours, and then when the 4 hours wore off, it was like I shriveled into nothing again, and I have to take it, go another 4 hours. But eventually I had to wean off of it, and that's one of the hardest things I've ever had to go through. I was literally shaking, waiting for the next, you know, take of drugs, because I had relied on it for months and months. That I became really dependent on it. Now, addiction and dependence is different. Addiction, you're robbing pharmacies and doing whatever you can to get some more. But that dependency was just me trying to get off of it, get away from it. And man, I was really dependent, and it was really hard. And those were painful months, because I had to have less and less of it. And what cured it was exercising more. So I got to go back. Before I was injured, I had this strong premonition to consistently exercise and to get really fit. And there was a good reason for that, because doctor said if I hadn't had the girth and the strength I had and the cardio, I wouldn't have made it. I would have died. Early on in the hospital, my heart took off, and it was beating 180, 190 beats a minute for 3 days straight. And that's equivalent to sprinting a marathon, sprinting for 3 days. And had I not reacted to that premonition by getting fit, I wouldn't be alive. It was just another godsend that preserved my life, because I listened. And the things I didn't listen to, he made up for. Things I didn't do. But I tried to do all that I could, and he made up the rest. Isn't that just so symbolic with our lives, to return to live with him? We do all we can, he's going to make up the rest. It's up to us to learn what that follow-through is. But he will make up the rest.
Is there anything you can't do anymore?
I can't. I just started running again. I couldn't run for a long time. So my hip flexor was hit, femoral nerves, and this leg was really skinny for a long time. It's still numb from my hip to my ankle. And both my arms are numb. I was shot here too. It fortunately just took, you know, muscle and meat out and didn't hit my joint, but had that gone out, I'd be biting him at the ankles to defend myself. I'd be useless. But fortunately, that didn't happen. So I couldn't jump or run for a long time. And I love to play basketball. And so I just shoot a little sooner, not jump as high. I run a little smarter, not faster. But you adjust and take what life gives you. But I'm happy to say I'm able to start running again. The healing's still taking place. And exercising's what got me off the pain. The more I stretch, the more I exercise, the better I feel. And helps cure those pains that when I'm still... it hurts. I can barely walk. If I go 3 days or 4 days without running or swimming, then I turn into this old man. And I gotta stretch out again and try and build up to feeling good again. And I'm forced to exercise. Like someone's behind me with the whip. Get on it. Move.
You had a question back.
Yeah.
Did you get any actual exit wounds?
This was, you know, an exit wound. Some of them came up and in and out the ambulance. They kind of slipped it out, but I had intestines hanging out right here a little bit. That one of them accidentally said, "His intestines are hanging out," and the other the other ambulance guy goes, "You're not supposed to say that."
Kind of
backhanded the other EMT, and but I could care less at that point. I was just happy to be in the ambulance.
Oh, so when you heard that, it didn't freak you out?
It didn't, not one bit. But at that point, I was low on blood. It was so hard to breathe. I felt like it was just closing in on me. I mean, I was filling up with blood inside. It was really hard to breathe. So all I could do was close my eyes and focus on slow, deliberate breathing. When I was laying there waiting for help to arrive, that's all I could do, focus on the breathing. If I could still breathe, I was going to still live. Yeah.
How has this experience changed your
relationship with God from before it happened to now?
I try and listen more. And he answers more. I mean, that's my everyday. I'm not perfect. I'm far from it. But I try and seek those, that comfort every day. So I'd say my relationship is hopefully growing closer. It feels like it is. Because I don't want to invite all the riffraff, the crud on TV, the violence, the, you know, the useless stuff that's going to take me away from that feeling of euphoria when he talks to me through that peaceful feeling in my heart, in my mind. I'm living on borrowed time. I got to take advantage of it. And that's how I do it. If I can go every day and have, you know, the little miracle that comes across my day, or the comfort of knowing I'm doing what's right by prayerful study, that's my goal over anything else. Some days I'm not as good as others, but I really try and do that. My time is short. They say I'm gonna have problems later in life, health problems. And so, to me, it's, if you think about it, all of our lives are pretty short in the big scheme of things. We don't have much time here. We gotta take advantage of it. Do some good. I had a lot of scar tissue. I couldn't lift this arm, and then I had a surgery in August that next year. It really freed my arm up. I mean, I couldn't lift it above. It was painful. I still can't touch my hip. When they put that rod in and whatnot, and I think I messed my arm up when I rolled to my truck, because it was loose. I had to bring it with me. It was just a dangling appendage that wouldn't work. I was wondering why my hand wouldn't work. It was kind of baffling. That's what took me so long to use my right hand. I just couldn't fathom it.
I can't grab my gun.
It won't work. And what had happened was, once the bone broke, it dropped and pinched nerves and just rendered it useless. Severed nerves. If you don't have nerves, your muscles don't grow. It's interesting. So nerves grow about 1 millimeter a day, if they can get back to where the same path they were before. So I had a year, really, for nerves to grow. And most of it did grow back. Some of it didn't, but not in a wheelchair. Or worse.
A lot of blessings.
Extremely a lot of blessings. And we're all entitled to those blessings. That's the coolest part about it. Mine was just showcased. But we all have a lot of blessings in our lives. Be grateful for them. They're there.
So physically, you said you're still healing.
Yeah, so some days it's just like, oh, I couldn't do that before.
Do you feel like it's the same way psychologically? I mean, do you still have flashbacks or fear set in?
I only had two dreams where, and these were early on, where I was in a room full of people, and then I see him come, and he comes right at me, and he fires around, and then I kill him in my dreams. Or, I don't know if I kill him, but in both dreams I shoot back and he's no longer there. To me, those were comforting. To know I could still do the job, I guess, still. They weren't self-defeating dreams. I did have two dreams in the hospital. And I was knocked out. It was around Thanksgiving, and every Thanksgiving our family takes a trip. And in this dream, we went to Plymouth Rock, which is back east, and we were on this train, and doctors were working on me, but my whole family was surrounding me in this dream, and it was just a huge comfort. And really vivid when I was alone, and then there was my family. And we were going on a trip, something I really like to do. So the other dream was I thought the hospital was using me as a CSI prop, a prop on a CSI show. So in my dream, they wheeled me into this room, and there were burn victims and other things going on, and they were setting up to shoot this TV show. And I thought that's how the hospitals made their money. And so I freaked out, and I started pulling tubes and going crazy. And I remember the nurses getting really mad at me, and I thought I was going to get sued and kicked out of the hospital. I was not happy, apparently. And then I woke up. That's all I remember. But kind of a funny dream. Well, are there any other questions?
How tall are you?
6'3" on a good day. I'm probably not 6'3" anymore. 6'2.5".
How far are you running?
About 1.5 miles, 2 miles. At a pretty good pace. I just started maybe a couple months ago. Feels so good. Nothing does it more than running for me.
No. I asked that I run too.
Well, I know you bike.
Yes, I bike at work. I love that. That's
fun. You get
fun.
Paid to bike.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, I know the Savior lives and He's there, and He loves us, and that we need Him, and He needs us. He wants us. Fortunately, He's given us that choice to do so. Some people in your life aren't going to make the right choices. It's going to affect you. But I'm confident that only through Him we'll get through this life and get back to Him. I hope you can grasp that. Take it with you through your lives. You all live in Twilla, right? You guys are the ones always getting those big storms from the lake. All that snow. I'm jealous of you. What?
I'll trade you.
Oh, you don't want snow. Well, that's why I live here. I can get away from the snow.
Snow,
we like
shovel.
The water that comes from the snow. Well, thanks again for letting me come up. I really appreciate it. And thanks, Travis.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate you being willing to do this. We did get you a little something for coming out here.
Oh, food, I hope.
Well, kind of, actually.
Thanks. You didn't have to do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. This is from a member of our state presidency. He was our bishop when we started planning this, and he wasn't able to make it. And he works for the Sundance catalog, and he said he had this neat tool. Thought would be good.
Wow, thanks a lot.
You got your gift certificate to Zach's.
Oh, come on. You didn't need to do that. You guys go eat at Zach's tomorrow.
Nah.
I'll take
for
it.
You. For you and your family. Food.
So. You've eaten at Zach's.
There's a few that have.
Thanks a lot. You didn't have to do this. Thanks.
You didn't have to do this either. So.
Well, I wanted to.
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah, just accept it.
I'll accept it. Thanks. Good luck tomorrow on the river.
I should call.
What color boats will you be on?
I don't know. We're renting them from Navtech. There was a problem with first word drafts. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they, I guess, got double booked. Bishop Holyoke didn't tell Bishop Knudsen that he had family that needed them. And so anyway, we ended up renting all from Navtech. So it all works out.
Yeah.
So they're probably yellow.
Yeah, they're probably yellow. That's a good, cool color.
Yeah. It works. It's still fun.
How long you guys been out of school? Cool. Summer fun.
Yeah.